Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Best Show Ever podcast, the podcast where I interview folks about the best concerts they've ever seen in their lives. I'm your host, Cam Hurt, and another special week for you, and another cool week of buddies. The two episodes that are out right now are real life friends. These people know each other and hang out in real life. They're both New Yorkers. They're both Big Fish fans. And the episode that you're listening to right now is with none other than Sarah Elaz. Incredible bassist, incredible New Yorker, incredible Fish fan. Sarah and I talk all about her experiences seeing Fish. We talk all about playing music in New York with her many projects that she works on musically. That's actually going to be one of my first shout outs of the intro here is her band, Boojum Band. If you are in New York or if you're around when you see her posting about this stuff, we're going to plug all of her socials, but check out Boojum Band. They are a band that she is in right now that is really doing some cool stuff. From the clips that I've gotten to see, I haven't been to New York to see them, but they do a very theatrical presentation. They've got skits that they're doing on stage. They're improvising things. There's a lot of, it's like a night-long experience. They're not just playing songs and covers and stuff. It's a very cool presentation. So check that out if that's something that you're into. She's also in a bunch of cool cover bands. She covers Fish and her Fish cover band. She covers Talking Heads and her Talking Heads cover band. I've seen her do Grateful Dead stuff. She's playing music a lot. So if you're interested in seeing Sarah play some bass in a number of different bands, you've got opportunities to do that. Another shout out I want to give on the intro here is to Meg Gliona. Meg is part of the Osiris Media family. She is someone who I interviewed in my first season. She's the first person who interviewed me on a podcast about Fish for Osiris. Had me on the Helping Friendly podcast last year, right after the Berkeley Greek Theater run with Fish. And she's the best. And she's got a cool segment out right now that is within the podcast space, but thank God it's not hour-long stuff. She's got a moment with Meg, and her first interview is with Cal Kehoe, and it's at a Reprise show, which is, again, another Fish cover band, a new one that's been popping up. And yeah, she chats with Cal a little bit. It's brief, it's relaxed, it's well done, it's really well shot and well recorded. And she is a professional. She's really good at this, at interviewing people, podcasting, talking about Fish, making it fun, making it seem like a conversation. And she's great at that. And so Check that out. A Moment with Meg. Follow the Megan Dance on Twitter and Instagram for more info on that. Follow Osiris Media, of course, for more info on that. That's just about enough intro out of me. Let's get into this conversation that I have with Sarah from Boojum Band. And here's a little bit of music first from Loom called What I Mean.
Hey, music fans. We wanted to let you know about Music on the Mountain, a show that will feature Anders Osborne, Dogs in a Pile, and Saints and Liars. This show will be directly after the Divided Sky Foundation's fun run at 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 18th, at the base of Akemo Mountain in Ludlow, Vermont. The show is presented by The Phoenix, a national nonprofit organization offering support to those in recovery and anyone impacted by substance use to celebrate recovery. If you're running in the Divided Sky Foundation's fun run, you'll be automatically registered for the show. It's a family-friendly event, and all proceeds from ticket sales and other donations benefit the Divided Sky Foundation. Visit Music on the Mountain, that's musiconthemtn.com, for more info and to get tickets. That's musiconthemtn.com. Hope you enjoy.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with.
The way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
Are you in, you're in New York? Yeah,
I am. Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn. Been here for like 7 years or something like that.
Is it so snowy right now?
It is so snowy right now. It's kind of beautiful. This is like the first time the snow has stuck. So I'm down to play in the snow. You're in LA, right?
Yeah.
How's LA?
It's good. It was like 40 degrees last week, so it was really tough on a lot of people. It was really hard on a lot of people. People get so bundled up when it's like 50 degrees out here, and I hate to be the guy like, you think this is cold, but
yeah. Where are you originally from?
Wisconsin.
Okay, so you know the cold.
Wisconsin, yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. Like, you're not soft. Like, my sister's lived in LA for, it's like 15 years now. Yeah, she's soft.
I've become soft.
Good.
My skin's getting thinner by the day. So
good.
That's
your journey, man.
Give me like one more year. I'll be like guy who never wears shoes.
Yeah.
Guy who like sometimes wears a shirt. Yeah. I'll be like drinking a lot of matchas.
Yeah.
Sick. Well, thanks for wanting to come on and do the show. I think that we were actually not far from each other at a show in Berkeley. And I was like, I'm pretty sure this is like the only fish account I follow on TikTok is Sarah. I see that's the only person I know who does a fish TikTok.
Oh my God. I think, you know, like, I know you've taken over the TikTok sphere, but I actually do think I was the first person posting fish content on there. It started during the pandemic. I'm friends with John Rua, who's a choreographer. He choreographed the Clones dance. He choreographed the Turtle in the Clouds dance. He choreographed Wombat, if you know it. And we were talking one day, and as a joke, he was like, you should make like a fish TikTok account where you like dance to fish songs. And of course, like that's what it started as. And then it just turned into me posting videos of myself dancing at fish shows and people yelling at me for being a rail rider. But I feel like I was like, when I first started posting fish content on there, I was the only one. It was like super early into TikTok. And it's kind of funny. Like I do a lot, but I feel like I get recognized the most from fish talk. But I put like no work into it anymore. Like it's just like I just forget about it. And it's just really funny. And now like people like you and other people are like blowing it up and really making it a scene. And I love that and I appreciate that. And it's like it's cool. But yeah, I just I'm not gonna post dancing videos on there. I don't know. The original idea got lost in translation.
Yeah, I mean, but it's so fun. That hit a part of my brain when I saw that video. I'm like, oh man, there's people who are my age who are doing fish content that is fun and like not a meme, and it's not mean to people. It's just like here's a couple moves you can pull at the at the fish show. It's like. It was great. It was so great. Before I might have posted like one or two videos. It was at like the Greek in Berkeley. I was doing the like thing that now people do to me. I was like, that's the fish TikTok like pointing up. I'm not going to say anything. Right? I don't want to freak them out, but.
No, do people come up to you? Do people say stuff to you?
Yeah. Cool. They do. It is cool. And people are always really nice and really kind. And it's same thing. Like I didn't think about that as part of the deal when I posted the fish videos. I was like, this is a funny thing that I and maybe four of my friends think is funny. So I'll put it on TikTok and it doesn't matter what happens with it. So yeah, same thing. Like super cool that people like took it and ran with it and all that stuff. But I was not planning on like talking to people about them at the show. But I do. It is cool. It.
You know, it's fun. And the community is really cool. Like I've been seeing fish and in the scene since 2010. And I think when I first started seeing, like, I didn't have people my age. Then again, I was way younger, right? Like, but it is really cool that our generation is taking over the scene. And then, of course, with bands like Goose and kind of the next generation, like we are kind of coming into our own and we are the leaders of the pack right now in a cute way. So it's really cool.
It's super fun. And like going to Goose, I feel like it happens even more. Like all those guys are on Instagram. You go to a Goose show, everybody in the building is on
social media, right?
but like at Fish, it's like there's some dudes who are like, I've never even touched social media. I just go
on Facebook. Like I definitely am very active on Facebook just because like all the fish groups and the call out groups, like all that stuff is really fascinating to me and really funny.
Yeah, when the New Year's run was going on, which I assume we are more than likely going to talk about, but I should just call the second season Game Hen Show Ever. I shouldn't even call it
Show Ever.
But yeah, like when that started, you know, I'm like on Twitter looking for streams and stuff. And everyone's like, you're not on Fish Facebook. I'm like, oh dude, I haven't been on Facebook in a while, but that's where the community is.
It's real. I'm all about Facebook. I'm all about the groups. I make all my little Facebook events. Like I'm on Facebook a lot, which is really surprising. But you got to reach the peeps somehow, you know,
you got to reach the peeps. That was the title of the episode. You got to reach the peeps.
That's like, I actually really like that.
Make the t-shirts. Reach the peeps. Speaking of reaching the peeps, we brought up the TikTok thing first, but now I know you as an excellent bassist through reaching the peeps. Now I've seen your actual work, you know.
My day job, not even my day job, but I know. Yeah, that's been crazy. Bass is sick. I love playing music. I mean, reaching the peeps in that way is just best. Like I've been having I just love music.
And you perform live so often, which is the best. Like
Yeah, you're catching me in the middle of like, you know, like an artistic, I don't even want to call it a crisis, but you know, like as an artist, you go through waves of really wanting something and then and really feeling good about it and feeling bad about it. And, am I good enough? You know, imposter syndrome. So you're catching me at a, I don't even want to call it a low right now, a very emotional place in my bass playing where I just like, I want it so bad and I love it. And I feel really excited about the projects and the scene and everything that's happening, where it's just like really overwhelming and loud and
exciting. Yeah. It's cool. I mean, it's cool to have shows to play. It's cool to have projects that you're excited on, but yeah, you don't get to pick your spots on the highs and lows. Like you don't get to pick when you're feeling a little dipped down. I feel the same way right now.
Right? You get it. You get that wave.
Yeah. And it's that thing of like, it's the new year and last year was really exciting. So now this year has to be quadruple exciting because, you know, now I know the formula of what I'd like to do, but it's not easy to get yourself to like feel inspired or, you know, like you said, you want it so bad.
You want it bad. And it consumes you. Yeah. I'm feeling very consumed by music and bass right now, which is beautiful and super special. And especially in this scene, like in the jam band scene, and especially as a woman, it's just like, it's a lot right now, but it's all really good things and it's really special. And I was gonna, we can wait till the end to plug all my plugs.
Oh yeah. You can plug them now too.
All my shows, you know, like we were just coming off. There's an amazing blues bar really close to MSG called Stitch, and they let me program the entire run. So pre and post shows. And it was just so much. I played three of them. I didn't want to play all six because I thought that'd be annoying, but maybe next year. coming off that high of getting to play for my friends with my friends with so many different musicians that really inspire me, like the Dogs in a Pile guy sat in.
Oh, man.
With me for a couple songs. Seep, of course, my Fish cover band's crushing. Like, so cool. Music is the best.
Yeah, and organizing music and like reaching out to people and getting them involved too. Like I love doing comedy. I love being on stage myself, but I love producing a show. I love asking people like, hey, do you want to be a part of this thing I'm doing and get people excited about your event? And
it's fun. My day job's in music too. I'm like a tour promoter as my day job. So all day I book shows and then all night I play shows. And then I go see shows and shows, music, you know? It's consuming.
So appropriate podcast.
We'll
have you in the right.
Yeah.
Talking about shows.
Yeah, shows. Sick. All day, every day, just shows.
Well, we will get into your sickest shows, your best shows ever, and we'll talk about some of those. But before we get into that, do you remember like the first show you ever saw, first concert in your life?
Yeah, of course. So the first arena show was Britney Spears from O-Town. Do you remember O-Town?
Yeah.
I actually re-met them recently. They played at a venue I was working at, and they're still going. They're still doing their lip syncing. hilarious. So yeah, Britney Spears in O-Town was my first arena show, but I will say an honorable mention to the Wailers, which was like the first.
Oh yeah.
It was like a folk festival, outdoor festival show I saw that really changed my life.
Were you a kid or was that like a teen smoking pot? Or
no, I wasn't like smoking pot yet. I was a kid and I remember my sister, like a random guy gave her a beer and it just like scared me. Like, what? And I think she smoked a joint with a guy too. And I was definitely young, like way too young to even understand. Yeah. But it really kind of primed me for that love of music outside and community, like the Britney Spears one. That's more, you know, mainstream inspired me to rock and roll, but the Wailers show is really what got me into more of the hippie, psychedelic, more grassroots Woodstock of everything.
Was that something that you were trying to go to, or were you brought along by your family? Or
I was brought along by my family. I will say my sister followed Fish around in the 90s. My sister's in like 300 shows. She's a little bit older than me. So that part, yeah, I accidentally got brought in just because I was there.
You got to have the older head sibling.
The usual, right? That's like the quintessential story.
You got to have it. That's how you get in.
Yeah.
I had my older brother, Kellen. He saw hundreds of shows and everything.
He
showed me what was cool, like Fish and the Wailers and T.I. I remember him showing me like the rapper T.I. when I was younger. I was like, this is cool because he said so.
I think my T.I. would be Shaggy. I like Shaggy.
Nice. Nice. Also a classic.
Yeah, great. So good.
Was the Britney Spears show, was that the one that you were like, this one's for me? Like all my friends are going type thing? Or
yep, all my friends were going, you know, I think we went with my mom. Horrible seats at the, I think it was at the TD Garden. I was from Massachusetts. And I mean, that was just spectacular pop star. Like, I'm not even in that world really, but just like the production and the whole thing, and you get your t-shirt. It's so cool. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, right? It's like, it's massive.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were really pushing it forward in the early 2000s too. And so like going to see like an NSYNC show or something was like,
yeah,
not like seeing other shows or like, you know,
that was like our time's Taylor Swift, right? Like, of course,
big maybe time.
Slightly smaller level, but that was it.
Britney was the one.
Britney was free Britney.
Free Britney, for real. do you have a worst show that you ever saw? Something that was just like uninspired or
there was two that came to mind. Well, two and a half. There was, I did get shut out of a Night of the Baker's Dozen. So I think that was the worst show ever because I only got to see 12 out of the 13.
Only
because I didn't get in. Come on, I'm not perfect. That's so messed up that I only saw 12. 13 because I got shut.
You're so right. I'd rather see 0 than 12. Right?
Yeah. I'd rather see 11.
Yeah, right.
No, so in my mind, I think the worst show ever, it was a Dave Matthews Band show at Jones Beach that got rained out after 8 songs. That was really uninspired show. Fine.
Yeah, the shuffling out of a show that gets rained out is the most depressing thing you can be a part of. It's tough.
And you're cold and your feet are wet. I remember I just got new Tevas and the puddles were like up to my calves. And thank God I had my Tevas on because they were waterproof. I just like the shuffle and the freezing. So I want to say that's my worst show. But I tell one more story that I don't even want to tell you which artist it was. But it was my first day working as a concert manager. I just got this amazing promotion. I was the stage manager of a music venue, and we had the artist have a mental breakdown on stage, stop playing after an hour. And this is my worst show. Like, there's no doubt about it. First day on the job, the artist gets off stage, refuses to play. I run to the backstage area. The band is screaming, "You are ruining our livelihood!" Like, insane rock and roll. I mean, this is years ago. I'm like a young, like in her 20s girl. And they're like, "You got a refund. We got two people are waiting." Everyone's yelling at me. I'm just out of my mind. I think I'm witnessing the end of a career. Well, I will say this man came back and has performed since then, many years later. I had to, and that night ended, I had to go on stage and speak into the microphone and tell everyone that the artist wasn't coming back and they had to leave and they weren't getting refunds.
You had to do it.
I had to do it on my first day.
Oh my God.
So that's my worst show. That's the worst show I've ever been to.
Oh God, the going up to the mic and being like, hey everyone.
thank you so much. You know, I got a standing ovation, I will say. I'm the queen of spin. I was like, he really thanks you so much for being here. We just really appreciate your patience and your time. The show is over. Have a great night. And meanwhile, backstage, the door is locked. Like, people are screaming. Like, the band is rioting. Like, pandemonium.
Wow. I cannot believe Paul McCartney did that. That's crazy.
And it was fish. I'm just kidding.
It was Trey.
Trey solo show.
Oh my fucking God. That is so brutal. So I have a part-time job where I work at a yoga studio sometimes.
Oh, nice.
And I work the front desk. And it's sometimes the teacher won't show up. And so I've got to walk in to a class of yogis and be like, hey, the class isn't happening. And I sweat and I shake and I get so nervous about that moment. And I end up like doing jokes because I'm nervous in there. And people are like, all right, it's fine. Stop. But that's not a full concert of people.
Yeah. It was like the room was full. It was like 300 people. Yeah. I mean, it made me a better person. It definitely made me better at my job, but it was really, really stressful and it was really bad. And it was just like, I was being poetic about it. I was like, this is rock and roll. Like, if this is the life I want, like there's going to be artist mental breakdowns. There's egos. There's like, this is the reality, I guess. I mean, I haven't seen it since. I've been in, some band fights, but yeah, it just really, really affected me and still affects me to this day. Even though, like I said, he's back. He's made his comeback. Yeah. He's played shows at that venue, but years later.
And good for Paul McCartney, but that is...
Paul McCartney, yeah.
Yeah. like you said, there are probably people who work in this industry that have never had to do that, and they've worked in it for 20 years. Like, stop the show. You had to do it day one. That's... Way to plow ahead,
I'm on a spaceship. I'm on a rocket ship to success. So I had to have some hardships nice and early on.
There is part of me that's like, I think this is a sign. I don't think. let's try something else. But that is rock and roll. That's rock and roll.
That's the industry.
Wow. Incredible. But yeah. So do you have... It is so difficult to pick a best show ever, and you've seen and worked at and played a billion shows at this point in your life. Do you have any honorable mentions before we bring up your best show ever that you
do? I do.
Miss
my list. I made my list. Okay.
Wow.
I did. I'm prepared. I like to.
Incredible. Yes. Thank you.
So, I mean, let's just get it out of the way. Gamehenge is not my favorite. But it's an honorable mention.
It's a great night.
It's
not the favorite.
No. Once they refine it, once it's on Broadway, and once, the bird doesn't malfunction, it'll be my favorite show. Once I finish the story, it'll be my favorite show.
Yeah. Tell them. Say it.
Tell Absolutely. Them. I sold the best night of my life. I cried. I had a great spot in the venue. I was the best night ever. But it's a pre-honorable mention.
Are you, and be honest, doing that for me because I wasn't there? are you saying it wasn't that good?
I said it was amazing, but it wasn't.
Right.
Did you watch the video?
Oh yeah. I watched it that night, and then I just recently brought myself to watch it again. And so
it was amazing. Tila was the best part. I cried.
Just the full entrance of the multi-beast. Like I said, we'll probably never talk about this ever again on this podcast. Every single episode. We talk about it every single episode. But yeah, it had to have been crazy. And yeah, you had a great spot and you are a part of that. You're up there close. You're doing
it. Yeah, it was fifth row center. It was perfect.
And you get down up there.
Watch the videos.
Find the videos.
I actually stopped. I had to stop filming, having people film me dancing, because everyone in the comments just like, why is there so much room?
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
Angle, it's a video. There's really not that much room.
Of course, the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Around the front area.
Yeah, we don't have to go into that either.
We absolutely don't. You can find that on Twitter. You can find that on Fantasy on Tour. Facebook,
yeah.
Believe it or not, that conversation has happened.
Yeah, of course. I've even talked about it on podcasts. So sure. We can move on.
We're good.
Okay. Honorable mention number one, it was at the Blue Note. Marcus Miller, the bass player, was doing a residency, and it was a bass free-for-all. So it was
Marcus Miller, Victor Wooten, Derek Hodge, and Mono Neon, all on stage.
Wow.
Four bass players on stage with, I think, a drummer, maybe a keys player. And it was just a night of, like, bass celebration, just jams. And they would call up guests, and they would play bass, and they would slap bass, and they would pick bass, and they would bass. And it was awesome.
Man, a celebration with a sick cast.
With Yeah. So I think I have to mention that, even if it was the most fun, even if I didn't have the biggest crew or the best spot, just watching music that's a celebration of the instrument that I love so much. Like, what can be better than that by, I think, the greatest living bass players of our time right now.
Yeah. And to be like, you have to go watch the greats in whatever you do. Like, if you, you got to go watch the best ever to do it, because it's inspiring.
It's so inspiring.
It's the best.
And,
yeah.
And even as artists, we get a little cynical, right? I think sometimes if maybe we're a little too harsh. I don't know if you get the same way about comedy, but I'm nitpicky, right? And I get an ego, and maybe I'm unenjoyable because I'm like, ooh, but the mix is messed up. Like, tone, like, ugh. We only played root notes that entire Grateful Dead cover show. Phil never plays the root notes. You know, like, I get that's a true story. I'm not going to name that bassist either.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, watching the greats, I think, is just something really important and beautiful. And yeah, has to be done, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, try to go see the best stand-ups there are and the best, you know, sketch comedians there are and stuff. And like, when I go to see stuff with my brother who doesn't, he doesn't perform comedy. He's very funny, but he's not like in that space. He's just like, you are so annoying to watch these shows with. Cause you're like telling me why it's good, telling me why it's not so good. He's like, just watch the show. I'm like, right.
I know. Yeah. My friends feel the same way about me.
Yeah.
I've learned to shut my mouth. And you know what? You don't want to ruin it for everyone also, right? Like, not all the audience knows the ins and outs of the craft. And I think it's better that way.
I
don't think there'd be any fans of music or comedy or any art if everyone was doing the art, because everyone would just be nitpicking and thinking about themselves.
Exactly. And especially in music, like, no one is listening to it the same way you are. Even someone else with a critical ear like you is listening to different things than you are. So it's not like this uniform opinion that you've come up with. Like, it's just yours.
Subjective. It's subjective art.
Yeah, exactly. But that had to be a cool celebration of bass.
That was amazing. Celebration of bass. My second runner-up. So, I mean, you got to tell me if this even counts as a show, because it wasn't live. But it was live. So, you know how Talking Heads just re-released Stop Making Sense in IMAX?
Yeah.
Did you know that? So, huge deal. The premiere was at the Toronto Film Festival, where it was the first time that all the Talking Heads were getting together after 20 years. Yeah. And being the girl that I am with a lot of Canadian contacts, because I book tours in Canada, I got tickets to see them.
Wow.
And see the first showing of Stop Making Sense in IMAX. I got to see the Talking Heads reunite. I mean, they didn't perform. They did an interview with Spike Lee after the showing. I saw them, you know, walk in. They were at the show with us. Like, we, Jerry Harrison was dancing right behind me and my friend.
Oh, my.
Last row, watching themselves play, like, Tina and Chris were like a couple rows down. David was kind of towards the front, and you were watching them watch them for the first time and be in the same room with each other for the first time in 20 years. And everyone was dancing and grooving, and it was really powerful. And Talking Heads are like one of my favorite bands. Like, my big three, Talking Heads are right up there with Phish and the Dead. Like, they are life-changing to me, bass-wise, because Tina Weymouth, the female bass player, pioneer. And just the groove and the lyrics, like, really, really meaningful, beautiful night. And yeah, so happy to have been there. So does that count?
That absolutely 1,000% counts. 100%.
It has to.
when else? I mean, like, when have you watched Bob watch the Dead? Like, when have you watched, you know, Trey watch Phish? Trey always says, I don't get to go to Phish shows. And like, you got to watch a Talking Heads show with the Talking Heads in eye view. Like,
Yeah, surround sound, view, amazing. Like, and I just, I mean, I love, I've seen that movie a million times. One of the greatest films of all time, and know every word, and everyone in the audience knew every word. And it was really powerful and really, really special. And I just feel so lucky to have been there. Cause it was also like a tiny, it was in like a really crappy movie theater in Toronto. The Toronto Film Festival is huge. And it's a citywide thing. And so it was in like a place where you'd like get your popcorn and watch whatever, X-Men. It was in that kind of movie theater in the middle of the day. And then everyone's just raging and the talking heads are there.
Yeah. And you're like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, what is this? Like, and we're in Canada, you know? why are we here? But it was life-changing, and it was so, so special. And I just feel so lucky to have been one of the 300 people in that room.
Yeah, that's so cool. And like, you've seen a band receive an applause while they're on stage, but they're in the audience vulnerable with no instruments, just looking around like, pretty cool, you know. Like, that had to be amazing.
Yeah, I got really sentimental, right? Let's tie it back to my artistic, you know, mental breakdown I'm having right now. But like, I got sentimental thinking about, like, imagine in 40 years from now, you're sitting in a theater watching one of like your greatest live performance achievements, and there's people that you don't know, and younger people and older people watching it with you. And I wonder what's going through your head, right? Like, are you nitpicking yourself? Is Jerry sitting there being like, oh, I really missed that change? Or do you celebrate it and let it go and enjoy it? And then all the other musicians, and some of them have passed away, and some of them are still with you. Just that beautiful nostalgia, but not nostalgia in like a stale way, just in a really beautiful, inspiring way for the future.
Yeah, especially because it's still so alive for people. People are still so attached to that band and that movie and that music. And so like, there's got to be a little bit of a feeling of like, man, this isn't even mine. It's not even my memory anymore. Like, this is all of these other 295 people that are in the room, their memory so sick that they are allowing me to be here to watch it with them. Like, that's how Mike will describe a Phish show. He's like, feels like there's a party going on, and like, we're lucky to get to play the party, you know, like, it's almost not even theirs anymore, you know? And so,
they say that all the time.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Pretty cool. Wow. That is, that absolutely counts as a show for sure.
So special. So sick. The best. Ugh.
Good band.
Good band. Good band. Great band. One of the best.
Great band.
Great band.
Speaking of best, do you have a best show ever?
I do. And it is Phish. It is a Phish show, obviously.
Thank God.
You're like, she has a Phish TikTok account and she hasn't even talked about Phish once. She likes all those other stupid.
Why are we talking about Victor Wooten right now? No,
why are we talking about Mike Gordon? Like, come on. Oh
my God.
Sorry to disappoint. Sorry to make you wait. So I got to say, my favorite Phish show is also a holiday show. It was Halloween 2014, which was thrilling, chilling. Halloween show was still forever and always will be my number one favorite show of all time.
Amazing. And why might that be?
Oh my goodness. I mean, there is just so many things leading up to it and to the night of it that it just really aligned perfectly. I mean, Vegas, it was my first Phish show in Vegas. It wasn't my first Halloween. I'd just gone through a lot of bad stuff. I called it my life Mageddon. A lot of bad stuff happened to me. I was coming out on the other side, and we were in Vegas. And I mean, I'm just a spooky girl. Let's be real. I love Halloween. I love witchcraft, and I love ghosts and ghouls and stuff like that. And you know, I got it. You know, it's kind of funny and poetic about it. I was in the last row of the venue. Like, you know me as Rail Rider Sarah, but that didn't start probably until 2018. So from 2010 until 2018, I was seeing Phish like everyone else in the back. So I was in the last row. I was coming off a knee surgery. So it was the first time I could stand up and dance at a Phish show in like a year. I was with my boyfriend at the time, some friends, and we had listened. We were in the hotel room when people got into the venue and announced what the album was, right? They put on the playbill. And we had already listened to the album in the hotel room. And we had no idea. Like, what is this? We get there, last row of the venue, and musically mind was just blown. I mean, it's self-explanatory, the fact that that might have been the most creative, amazing way to cover an album of all time, in my opinion, right? Taking sound effects and creating groovy, funky instrumentals over them that really invoke that feeling of that story. It just, it's the best. It's the best. It's so good. And it's spooky. And there was dancers in the haunted house and they were all facing each other, right? Fish will always say we play best when we're in a room, a really tight room close to each other. Like they were next to each other. They were feeding off each other and you can hear it. You can hear it in the songs.
And with what they pull off, you know, especially by 2014 at this point, you know that like they could really do anything and they still, I mean, the way that they, like you said, pull in samples, pull in sounds, create grooves about it, like that is not like on the table in your mind. You're no. Like, this is going to be a great show. They're going to play some cool covers. Like you never know what's going to happen. Like
yeah. Maybe well, and the year before was Wingsuit, which I was also at. Yeah. It was an all new album. Very mixed reviews. Let's be real. Some people hated it. I had an okay show. I didn't have the best show. Well, it wasn't my worst. It wasn't my best.
Yeah.
So really anything was on the table. You could already tell that Fish was going to start doing different things on Halloween. I remember one of the gravestones right on the stage. Some of the gravestones had like poster nutbag, Esther, and one of them says Fish's Halloween tradition. So they were kind of celebrating the fact that they broke this tradition, which, I mean, it's a beautiful one, right? Covering an album. Yeah. They covered the Talking Heads. It totally changed their jamming style. But this celebration of breaking that tradition in such a creative way, which I think then kind of opened the doors to Cosmo Vox, right? And like this kind of, this was the beginning of that like creative spin on Halloween and where they're composing and grooving in new ways. And it's legendary.
And what a way to release new music. I mean, what a way to like introduce all of this stuff that you've been working on to people. This and massive pageantry.
More of it. Like, yeah. I'm waiting for the Very Long Fuse to come back. Where's it been? I thought Shipwreck was great. I mean, they play the Dogs. Like, I wish they played I don't even think they played any over this New Year's run. They didn't play any Thrilling Chilling, I don't think.
I got a Your Pet Cat with my ex-girlfriend, and I think that might have been her final straw with me.
Yeah.
She was like, what is happening in the show? I'm like, this is a great opener, just so you know. This is awesome. She's like, cool, I'm going to hang out in the lobby. This is awful.
Oh, that's so good. Oh,
so good.
It's so good. I love it. Cat noises.
And dog noises. Yeah, it's great. Do them all. But yeah, I'm sure there are still a lot of Fish fans, you know, that are still would love to hear them, you know, come out and do the fucking White Album or whatever. And that is cool. That's a very, very cool thing. But like as a creator, it's like, man, like what an opportunity that they take to introduce what they've been working on, what they're excited about to people in the biggest possible way. I think that's like the coolest. And like for me, that I didn't get to go to Cosmo Vox, but when friends came back from that, I was like supremely, supremely jealous because of the presentation of that and like the new music and all that stuff. And I was like, fuck, like Halloween is a magical Fish run that I haven't been a part of.
Yeah, Fish in Vegas is next level, right? Because you get on the show and you just have Candyland of hangs and everyone's around, no one's going anywhere. Usually there's an after show. I think I've been to a couple after shows in Vegas too, but yeah, it's a really beautiful, magical place to see Fish. I mean, I hope I'll end up at the Sphere. Probably will, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's really life-changing show. And I even before this podcast, it's always and will be the number one show that I bring up. It's just,
I love that. And you've seen so many shows since then. So that means that's got to be, you know,
I've seen cream of the crop. Since then. Yeah. And I mean, they all have their moments, right? I'm a different person. That's almost, 10 years ago, almost.
Do you feel like that Lifemageddon is a huge part of it? Like, it's obviously the thrilling, chilling stuff is great, but.
I think it is. I think that primes you too, right? Like, going back to the fact that music is subjective, you walk out of a show and yeah, depending on your headspace, that was the best show or your worst show, right? Even this run, even if like everyone has a different night, not because they're musically better than any other ones, just that's where you were. So the Lifemageddon had almost everything to do with it, probably. And the music.
And the music was great.
It was legendary, and we go down the Fish history, but really it's about me.
good job, Fish. We're talking about Sarah right now.
So. Yeah. Fish. I mean, Fish was there for me through my Lifemageddon. Like the one part I talked about, like my tearing my ACL. I went to 7 Fish shows in a wheelchair the summer before.
Oh my God.
Which is crazy. I mean, really, people were really nice to me. And I went to, what was that? It was like Mansfield, 3 nights of SPAC, and 3 nights of Randall's Island in a wheelchair because I had just gotten surgery.
Hey, take a seat. Enjoy the Fish show, you know? No one's ever going to make fun of that guy for sitting. Go ahead and sit.
No, and I had some special seats. We got ADA people. I got some free beer one night.
Yeah.
People were offering me free other goodies. I'm like, I'm okay, but thank you.
You've made up for it in getting down in future shows. Yes, take a seat.
But yeah, but that Halloween run was the first run I planned again, right? Because it was right after. So that meant a lot to me.
Was it after that you're like, we're doing Halloween every year?
I missed Cosmo Vox also. And I missed Bowie. No.
Man.
Yeah. I mean, maybe because of where I live, I'm a New Year's Eve girl, right? It's in my city. I don't have to worry about hotels, anything. People come to my city. Yeah. So Halloween is still a treat for me.
Yeah. 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 I mean that, I was also just like when they come around guy, but I was from Wisconsin. So that wasn't enough at some point. Cause it was like to an Alpine Valley every 3 years. It's not good.
But it's also hard, I think, for you on the West Coast, right? Like as much as I love LA and I might end up there one day, it's definitely in the cards. I think you have a little bit different access to Fish and to jam bands in general. How's the scene over there?
It's weird and sparse. You know, it's like there's not a lot. It's easy to get tickets. I'll say that, you know, like Fish played the Hollywood Bowl and you could get tickets for $20. Like in an easy, like good section. And so, and that's not the case almost anywhere else in the country. Like you can't see Fish for like under $80, like, you know, whatever, you know?
Totally.
And so yeah, there's not as many people. And then like when you're going to shows, it feels like there's a jam guy who's brought 4 friends who don't do this. And like, there's a lot of people like, you know, getting into it in the crowd, which is a cool, like, you know, that's also a cool experience to like watch people be like, what is this? And, you know, like that kind of a thing, but it's a little different than like that unadulterated love they get on the East Coast, you know, like it's just like a little, I feel like they've got to work a little harder. Every jam band, like Goose didn't sell out the Greek Theater, you know, Dogs in a Pile plays, you know, bigger shows on the East Coast and they played like a very small, you know, bar out here. It, for the person who's interested in jam bands, it makes it fun because you're seeing them in smaller venues. You're able to get tickets day of if you forgot, you know, like all that kind of stuff. But
so interesting.
Yeah, it is a little different.
I think about it all the time. I mean, LA is the place to go, right? New York and LA are the places to go for music. And do I want to make it my life goal to grow the jam band scene in LA? Maybe.
There's good people out here that are going to everything too, which is cool. Yeah. Like there is it's a smaller community. So you run into all the same people at all these shows. But yeah, it's not that fully fleshed out New York, or just general East Coast thing. Even when you go see them in like South Carolina or, you know, anywhere on the East side of the country, it's like a bigger event and there's more people there. There's more people getting shut out. There's the tickets are a little bit, you know, higher, but you know, still had a blast at these West Coast shows. I mean, did you Just Berkeley, or did you do Hollywood Bowl too?
I just did Berkeley because my first Phish show was at Berkeley in 2010. So
wow, cool.
Full circle moment. Yeah, really, really cool to be back. That venue is so cool.
It's the coolest.
It's awesome. The stage, the bowl, GA situation. It was magical. So yeah, I only flew out for those three.
Not a bad three to miss. That was like the coolest. That opening night show is quickly ran the ranks of my top shows too. You know, like the
Tweezer one.
Yeah, the like 46-minute Tweezer. That was like really weird. And Mike was like playing with that like theremin thing.
Oh yeah.
So cool. I was like, this is improv right now.
But I love that. Oh, that was so fun. Oh, I do remember that. He said he told people on his hotline, I think, what it was, and I totally forgot.
It's like there's like two other made in the whole world, and Mike's got one. And he was like kind of trying and failing with it that night and like letting the rods kind of fall.
It was like this thing, right? It was like going back and forth. Oh, what was that? So real. So weird. It was so good though. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so good. And it was like kind of chilly out, and it was like
cold.
You're like bundling up and then like, you know, slowly boogieing off all your sweatshirts that you have on, and like, and also, yeah, to see them that close. I haven't got to see them that close. And so being down on the, you know, near the rail, and like, you know, my brother was like really nervous. He's like, all right, if we're down here, dude, we got to like get down. These people like fucking dance. Okay. Like we can't like, there's no like pencil necking, like there's no like, you can't stand still down here. I'm like, I know. I follow Sarah. I've seen the videos. I know what to fucking do.
How'd you do?
How'd I've you got do? Moves. I do the. I did great. It was awesome. Yeah, it was awesome.
Energy. Yeah. Say what you will, you know, but the energy down by the front is unmatched.
Yeah, people are just. Yeah, there's a lot of abandon down there. I think that if you've never been close at any concert, whether it's Phish or not.
Not exclusive to Phish.
Yeah, you feel like if you're down there, you're just like locked in on the guy. But I mean, people are out of their heads down there. Like people are truly dancing and like spinning and like in the show in a way that sometimes when you're in stands, people are able to talk and converse and not really be locked in. And so it felt like everyone down there was very locked in. Especially for that. That's really the only time I've ever done it. So, you know, I was like, wow, we gotta dance, dude. We're gonna stick out like sore thumbs, still thumbs.
I love it. We call it like being in the band's living room, right?
Yeah.
That like semicircle. The first time I ever got down to the front was 2018. What show was it? San Francisco.
Cool.
What's that? Bill Graham. That's
yeah.
Yeah. And I remember getting my life changed. Like, cause in my past life, I used to be a professional dancer. Actually, my degree is in dance.
I had no idea.
Past life. Yeah. So I get down there and all of a sudden these people are just dancing and being so free. And I kind of made a mental note. I was like, oh, I need to be here. I need to be here with this beautiful pink haired dancing fairy. This is amazing. I'll never leave. Yeah,
right. 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 Yeah. I mean, very cool experience out here in California, being in the living room, in the living room.
Yeah. The living room is a good place to be.
Sarah, this has been so sick to have you on, and talk about shows. Do you have shows of your own coming up, that you'd like to plug, or do you have any shows that you're seeing coming up that you're stoked about?
Ooh. When's this airing? I guess some of this is time sensitive.
This is like, we're like shooting for like early March for the first episode. So it'll be like March and April.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm just going to plug the fact that I'm in a new original band, which I'm so excited about. Everyone should go follow Boojum. Boojum, Boojum Band, started with these awesome guys. I like to think about it as we're just, you know, doing Game Henge our own way. These guys have we have a big theatrical background, and we're putting on like long thematic jam band story epic evening length performances, plus like epic jams. So follow Boojum. I'm super
excited. Wow, that's sick.
I'm so excited about it. Yeah, right now we're super focused on like Alice in Wonderland material. We just did an Alice in Wonderland show at Brooklyn Bowl with lights and dancers and projections and heady grooves. I'm over the moon about it. We'll have an EP coming out in March, April too, so everyone will have to listen to that then. What else am I plugging? Yeah, just like if you're in New York, come see me play Grateful Dead and Fish music. I'm in my Fish cover band Seep always plays around. I've been playing a lot of Dead Country Tuesdays, put on by CEG, where we just play Dead tunes. I have a bunch of those coming up, but that might be a little too late for the episode. And yeah, I'm just super excited. Music is I'm just super excited for everything that's coming. I feel really inspired.
Yeah, plus, what I mean,
stuff like writing original music has just been life changing.
I bet. And putting some pageantry behind it and some production value behind it is so cool too. That's such a cool project. And also there are some people who listen to this podcast who like Fish and Dead music. So if you guys listen to Fish and Dead music, go ahead and see Sarah at any of the venues that she's performing at with any of her bands. That'd be sick. Do you have any shows coming up what's the next one that you're seeing?
That I'm seeing. So actually our friend Mike Gordon's about to be in town next week.
Cool.
He's doing a show with Joe Russo. Walter and one other person. This is going to be a blast at the Salt Room. So it's going to be like a tiny 250 cap room. They're doing two shows, totally sold out. It's going to be really, really great. Talk about being right.
That's the living room. Yeah. If you're in a venue like that, that's the living room.
That's the living room. So we're about to be in Mike Gordon's living room. And then, I mean, the Sphere's coming up. I'll probably be there. I think
you'll be there. You'll be there. I'll see you there.
I never make plans that far ahead. It's funny. Like everyone asks me every year, like, oh, what summer shows you going to? Like, dude, I don't know. I usually say some, not all, but most, I think is what I usually answer.
Well, I hopefully will see you again at some, not most, not all, but most of these, of these shows this summer.
Not all, but most.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That was a conversation with Sarah. What an awesome combo with her. I mean, to play music, to be a fan of music, to work in the music industry, she has got a pretty full, well-rounded view of what it's like to go after this music thing. Just talking to her about wanting it so bad and, you know, being in the middle of really working hard to try to get yourself seen and get yourself better and get yourself out there as an artist. It's super, super relatable for me, for folks who are making stuff and, you know, trying to get things out there. I'm sure it's relatable to you too. You just want it. You just want to do well. You want to do a good job. You want to be proud of what you do. And you want people to be stoked on it. And it's a good combo. It really is. And then also, you know, just talking about going to Fish shows when you're not able to dance or, you know, you're in a, you know, brace or a wheelchair or something like that. That's dedication. It's true dedication. If you're still getting out to Fish shows while you're injured. So anyone who wants to check Sarah on her fandom, I would say fucking bring it. Let's hear about the time that you were at a show in a cast. I'm sure that's like literally half of you. I gotta be honest. I'm sure it's a ton of you. Got a bunch of true fans out here. Guys, thanks so much for listening to this episode. We got another episode out right now with Sarah's friend, Roy Donk. That's all of our friends. Roy Donk. Roy is if you've gotten a slice of baklava after a Fish show right on the lot, right at the gate, right as you've left, that's Roy or one of Roy's people. And we talk about the beginnings of his baklava journey and selling things at Fish to get around. And he's got some amazing Fish stories. So definitely check those out. We've got bonus clips right now up on the Patreon. Go ahead and check that out. We just want to have a little bit more for you on the Patreon. So if you pay $4 a month, you get access to bonus clips. You also get access to these episodes a day early on Mondays. So keep that in mind. And until next time, guys, thanks so much and have a great show.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget, and we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.